The Stone Cold Paradise podcast is a series of informal conversations with the classic rock band Stone Cold Paradise and their collaborators, covering over 50 years of rock and roll.
When you're watching a nature documentary, do you root for the predator or do you root for the prey to escape?
It depends on the backstory.
Right. And plus I like Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? But I do find myself rooting for the predator a bit too, right? Yeah.
Right. Well, I was actually talking, Roger, more about, like, have you seen Planet Earth?
Oh, a nature documentary.
Right, like a predator.
I'd root for the predator. Everyone's got to eat, you know? Every single person is a predator to someone and a prey to someone. So I think we all have to root for the predators.
If an alien race showed up on the planet Earth and was hunting us, you'd be all for them winning?
No, prey.
The predators, haven't you seen the movie, mate? Alien versus Predators, right?
Right. Again, Roger, we're sort of on this thing about nature documentaries, though.
Right. But he brought up aliens, right? Am I wrong?
Well, Roger. So who do you root for? Do you root for the aliens or do you root for the predator?
The predators, right. Yeah, right.
I think if they were like the little green aliens, like the Area 51 aliens, right, I think I'd root for them. But because it's like demented demon aliens that shoot out of people's chests, I'd prefer the dreadlocked predator.
Right. What if it was like those little green aliens versus, you know, those predators that we put up in prison, right? I think I'd root for the aliens as well, right?
Which predators in prison?
Oh, you know, the predators that aren't the bad types, right? That we say, oh, you're a predator, you're going to prison, mate.
So you're
sexual
talking
predators.
Right, that's the one.
Right, okay.
So we choose the aliens in that situation, right?
Mm-hmm. That's the thing, it's backstory dependent.
It's all backstory, right? Backstory dependent for sure.
I have to say, the Alien versus Predator movie really took those two stories and did so much better with it than either of its predecessors.
You like that movie the best, right? That's what you're saying. By far.
I don't think that John McTiernan and James Cameron or Ridley Scott know how to direct a film. And Alien versus Predator is dealing with so many epic themes, two apex creatures hunting and then people stuck in the middle. It's very similar to, you know, I feel like they were mapping, it almost felt like they were mapping my childhood into that situation.
Well, go on.
Well, you know, when you're a child and your two parents are basically at each other's throats all the time, essentially tearing each other apart, and you are the human in that situation, and the rest of the, and they are just like fighting each other with frying pans and knives and things like that, and so I felt who's
the predator and who's the prey in this situation?
Right.
Well, I think the predator in this situation would have been my mother, and the alien would have been my father.
So neither of them are the prey.
No. It was me that had to worry. What I'm trying to say is that the story feels like a perfect mapping of not just my childhood, everyone's childhood. Everyone's childhood feels like Alien versus Predator. Am I wrong?
Right. Mine actually felt a bit more like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh, go on.
So my mother and father, they got a divorce. Right. And in order to spend more time with us, my father actually dressed up and called himself actually straight up Mrs. Doubtfire.
Wow.
Now, this is long before the movie, so when I saw the film, I was wrecked.
Right.
You know, I found it very sad. However, it ended quite differently for us. You know that scene in the movie when Robin Williams gets his chest caught on fire while trying to cook a lobster?
Yes.
So when my father's chest caught on fire, that led to hospital in a coma for about a year. Only until I saw the movie did I realize what had happened.
Right.
So I had thought that Mrs. Doubtfire was, you know, in hospital, and I thought that my dad was just away.
Oh, wow, mate. Well,
he was a businessman, you know, he was a travelling salesman of sorts, but it was for Bibles.
Sorry to hear that, mate.
Right.
I can't get over how lucky you are to have had divorced parents.
My story was much more like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, right?
Oh, right. How so?
Right. So my dad, he ran like a chocolate candy factory, right? And he didn't like all of all having all these children, right? So invited us there one day, and I lost all my siblings. I was the only one to survive, right? Had the golden ticket.
Exactly the same story.
Well, hold on. What exactly happened to the siblings?
You know, hey, look over there, looking to that little chocolate river, and then, you know, push them in, drowns, that sort of thing.
So in this case, I guess you would describe it as murder.
Right.
There brings some questions of royalties, because, you know, perhaps they copied your life, Alistair, onto Mrs. Doubtfire.
You know,
perhaps they copied your life,
right,
Roger.
My dad probably owes money, right? You know,
okay. Well,
Roald Dahl.
Right, probably owes him a little bit of money or something, right?
Mine was a little bit different, you know. My life growing up was like Finding Nemo. Right. My father's second wife, she passed away, and then he took me to live on a boat, and I got lost from my dad, and I befriended a bunch of sea turtles, mm-hmm. and also a fish that couldn't tell me where we were going. It was honestly so frustrating to be friends with someone who you tell this fish something and then they forget about it immediately. Right. You know what I mean? I'd be like, hey, Dory, where are we going? And she'd be like, what
you described sounds like a fish just gurgling water.
Yeah, you know. And then I ended up in a dentist office in a fish tank for a while. Escaped that. And it was pretty wild. A seagull came to the window and took us out of the out of the tank, you know, and dropped us back into the water. And then my dad's fishing boat picked me up the next day. Yeah.
I don't
see any commonalities with Finding Nemo, but interestingly enough, I knew several dentists that kept people in fish tanks as well.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I remember as a child in the 1940s being taken to the dentist, and there was this large warehouse in South London, and they had all these tanks with all these boys in them, and they'd sit you down, and you'd have a series of, I guess you would call them car batteries, that they would plug you into that would essentially shock you to sleep. And then you'd wake up and the tooth that was problematic was removed.
Sounds like they were the predators in that situation, right? Mm.
Oh, I was just curious. What movie is that?
Good Will Hunting, maybe?
The universe surrounds us, the stars, the moon, the sun, but every rod around me is quantum dumb.
All right, we've got a special guest here today, right? You know, he's the cable guy, right? But no, not that cable guy if you're thinking Jim Carrey now. No, more important than that, this is the guy that sets up all our cables, right, when we're in the studio recording as a band. So please, everyone, welcome Stone Collins.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Stone.
Good to see you, lads. Oh, it's been a bit, isn't it?
Been quite a bit, I think. You know, right. I haven't seen you since, what was the album that we did? Quantum Dumb.
Mm-hmm. Quantum Dumb, right. Yeah. That's the last time we spent a long time together, but I have crossed paths with most of you individually since then.
You came by my flat, 6 months ago, I think, with...
Yes, right, yeah. So I stopped by because I had worries that I was a werewolf.
Right.
And I was like, can I sleep here tonight and see if I kill one of your chickens, and you know, at night?
Yeah, no, it was great.
And I didn't. And I said, like, oh, okay, good, I'm not a werewolf. So that was good to know.
I mean, I was worried about you at the time. I said, sure, like, come on in and sleep here.
Well, I didn't want to hurt the chickens, but I also had to know about me state.
Right.
Yeah. Stone, I feel like that's happened a few times. Many times you've thought that you were a very, I don't want to say fictional, but I'll say fictional monster.
Well, I prefer the term speculative.
A speculative monster?
Yeah, you know, sort of like not quite validated, but we know it's out there.
Yeah, I think this a little bit might be my fault. I remember we used to like prank Stone all the time, you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
Yeah, that's what you were jokesters. You're very funny jokesters.
Right.
See, I gave Stone all of my books I wrote, you know, the Harry Potter books.
I love them. I couldn't put them down.
Yeah, and there's so many werewolves in there. So
many. I tend to relate very much to protagonists of books I'll read. I read Wuthering Heights and then fell in love with a gardener. And I read Moby Dick and I thought I was a whale for 2 weeks.
Right.
I should have known that he would think he's a werewolf, and then...
Yeah. We did have a great night. We watched That Thing You Do And
did you lose any chickens?
Just the one.
Yeah, not to me murdering him. No. I just got excited and released him during Tom Hanks' appearance, and one flew out the window. I was like, I didn't know chickens could fly. But he couldn't, and he died.
That's right. Went,
so it was tragic.
Tried to fly out and went right down to his death.
Very fast. Seemed happy. What? A moment of brief joy, and then he plummeted into a puddle of his own body.
Isn't that how it goes?
To plummet into your own body?
No, I feel like the minute that you find joy in life, or like a true exhilaration, immediately you have some sort of horrible downturn that
Jesus Christ, Barney, good Christ.
Barney, you're talking about your boners again, right?
What a philosophy.
It's natural, right? They get, you know, it's an uplifting joy and then they go down, right? They've got,
yeah, the boners can't last forever. What goes up must come down.
Right, right.
But should you feel such immediate pain throughout all of your body when your boner falls?
Oh, you want to see a doctor,
don't
mate.
Think so. No, man, I don't think it's yeah, right.
No, that's definitely gonorrhea.
Right.
I've had loads of gonorrhea. And the number one symptom is when your boner's going away, you feel shoots of pain throughout your body. So, oh, I've got the clap. Well, I how long has this been true for you?
Oh, about 6 years.
Oh, no.
Goodness gracious, man. Yeah, got a doctor. Jeez, Luke.
Oh my God. Mate, every time the boner goes down, it makes the gonorrhea stronger.
Yeah. You're probably more than half gonorrhea right now. It's, if you've made it look incredibly strong.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize that STDs worked in this matter where you're
you don't have to apologize. Just get to the doctor, mate.
Yeah, if you didn't have such a negative view of doctors in the first place, I think it would have taken us, you know, taking care of us a long time ago.
Well, they're pretentious, aren't they? I mean, they're
pretentious.
I'm sure they're pretentious. They're a doctor.
This is the most pretentious man in the band, right?
Yes, this is a pot calling the kettle pretentious.
Listen, I don't like the idea of someone knowing more about my body than me.
Well, if you don't like that idea so much, I mean, you might think about going to medical school.
I'd like to, but I had him banned from several medical schools.
You had me banned from medical schools?
Yeah, because I thought, well, you guys was always pranking me. I was like, all right, I'll get them pretty good. And I called up Oxford and I told him you was a paedophile.
Oh, that explains so
that's
much about
it. That's
why it is. I was like, he's not caught, so don't say anything, but he is.
Well, last time I went to Oxford, I had, you know how they sail along the rivers in Oxford?
Well, who doesn't?
Well, yeah,
yeah, who doesn't? I think they're so special.
I would have professors come out and throw tomatoes at me as I sailed along the river. Along
that's Oxford. It. Yeah, it means they think you've committed a heinous crime.
Mm-hmm. That's a
very
sure
shame sentiment. Based society up at Oxford.
Are you still plugging in cables there, Stuart?
Oh, you know it, mate. Best in the biz. I'll plug in cables for anyone. And I'll give you the best cable you need. And I'll plug it in nice and snug. Click, clack. Whatever you got. Quarter inch, quarter centimeter jack. Two centimeter jacks. Whatever you got, mate. I'll plug them in. It's easy. For me, it's not for everyone.
I never used to know how to plug in anything, remember?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you was the worst.
I would play the guitar and no sound would come out and I'd be like, this thing's broken. I broke so many guitars on stage just because none of them were plugged in.
Not as an expression of being a badass.
No, I was so frustrated that they all weren't plugged in.
You know, I found myself plugging in two cables into my bass, right?
Right. Which can really hurt it.
It could, right, yeah.
Yeah.
And Stone was the one that pointed that out, right?
Plus you dilute the sound. You're spreading the sound out two cables, so it's sort of very quiet.
Right.
Plus it looks daft.
It does, right.
Makes your guitar look like Dr. Octopus from the Spider-Man mythos.
Right.
Is that how they recorded the soundtrack for Spider-Man the Musical?
Yeah.
The problem with Spider-Man the Musical was that it was too loud.
It was too loud. Well, everything else is perfect. Story, good. Character, spot on. Songs, good. But you couldn't bloody hear the performers because the instruments were turned way up. Then you get the right cable guy in there, jams two cables into every instrument, two cables in this cello, two cables in that flute. Everything quiets down.
My understanding with Spider-Man Turn Off the Dock was that there was a whole different cable problem.
Different cable, not my department.
No, that's not Stone's.
I did work on Spider-Man Turn Off the Dock, but only on the music cables. Okay. Once I saw the performers fall into the air, I was like, oh, well, someone's in trouble.
Stone, how was it like to work with The Edge, right?
Oh, he's lovely, lovely bloke. Super Christian, very polite. drives his own car. He's real nice, likes to hug. He's big on compliments.
You say that he's super Christian.
Yeah. He's maximum.
He's
like, brings it up all the time. You're like, you want a sandwich? He's like, what, like Jesus might have? I was like, Edge, I don't know. Just you want a sandwich.
It's a good point, right?
He's like, would Jesus get one? I'm like, oh, look, I can't speak for the man. I'm just going to Pret-a-Manger.
But could you imagine, right? Jesus inside of a Subway, right? Just ordering a sandwich.
Oh, he'd be good at it, I think.
Right, yeah.
He'd go back there himself and he'd be like, oh, tuna fish. Let me turn this into a whole ream of tuna fish.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, right. He probably only ever orders 6-inch because he's like, I'll take care of the rest myself.
Right.
Do you think Jesus ever gets kicked out of a bar? Because, like, you know, he goes, hey, can I have a water? And turns it into wine. And they're like, you didn't pay for that.
So we didn't card you for that.
What would you do, WWJD?
Right.
I'd leave him, but, you know, I'm not confrontational.
If I were tending bar, I feel that I would have to ask him to leave.
Right.
Well, can you penalize a man for making his own wine out of water? I mean, two questions. No, one question, and then we'll see where that takes us.
You better tell me how many questions for you ask, because I'll have to get prepared. If you said two questions, only ask one, I'll die.
I guess I was just going to ask if they charge for water.
Okay, that's one.
Well, if it's bottled, yeah. If it's tap, then no, mate.
If it's tap, then Jesus is fucking running a scam.
He sees an attractive girl in the bar and he goes, oh, is that what you're drinking? And she goes, yeah. And then he turns it into wine.
Oh, you know it.
Because it looks like he's buying her a drink.
He's showing off.
Yeah.
He shows off, yeah.
Right.
I do remember the biblical Jesus being a bit of a show off.
Constantly.
What about the non-biblical Jesus?
Who walks on water, mate? Who walks on water?
Yeah, what was that for? You cured the leper of leprosy. I was like, all right, that I get, right? Because he's, you know, he's sick. Right.
Yeah.
But he's walking on water. What's that for?
It's showing off, mate. Exactly.
If you don't believe that this man can do miracles after healing a leper, then...
Excuse the expression, but you are preaching to the choir. I believe that Jesus is, in fact, a huge show.
Thank you for warning us. You were using an expression. Because if people use parts of speech and I'm not ready, my nose ruptures.
Does it rupture?
Yeah, the little wall in between. It's like I'll become an instant cocaine addict and it sort of just, it melts.
That explains why your nose gushes blood so often in the studio. Oh,
I feel bad because it interrupts recording. Remember, on Quantum Dumb, we had to keep stopping because my nose would bleed so easily because I'd sneeze.
Right, eventually we just decided to paint the floor and the walls red.
That solved it.
We had a couple songs inspired by that, you know. Bleed that blood and...
Bleed that blood.
Cocaine nose problem.
cocaine nose problem.
Nose problem. Was
no,
a that
real
was,
banger.
That was a banger.
That was an up-tempo number, I'll tell you. Cocaine nose problem. Get the feet moving, I'll say that. You're dancing by the end if you weren't dancing at the beginning.
That was high-octane rock and roll right there.
Oh, for sure.
The odd thing about that song is I really think it was an anthem in favor of cocaine by the time you finished listening to it.
Well, musically it was. Lyrically, very against.
Yeah. If you actually listen to the lyrics of the song, you get quite sad. Mm-hmm. Hearing the music by itself, you are... tipping and tapping your toes.
But then we made a music video where it was someone who would do a lot of cocaine and then would go to the doctor every time they did cocaine.
Yeah, that music video was really us hedging our bets. Sorry for your nose.
Oh, you didn't warn me of the expression. look at me nose. All bleeding like dying pig.
No.
We got a tissue. Hold on. Right. There we go. And that's all right. It's all right, lads. So nice to see you.
You know, Stone, I want to apologize, mate. You know,
I was waiting for this.
Right, going back to this whole monster thing. Am I a monster, right? I feel like it maybe started when you fell asleep, right, mate? And you put toilet paper all over you. Shitty toilet paper, right?
I thought it was like, a mummy.
Right, am I a shitty mummy, right?
I woke up and I was like, oh shit, I'm the worst mummy. this is bad. I thought. Not only am I cursed, you know, Egyptian prince, but I'll suck at it.
Right, I'm sorry, mate, yeah.
I feel a tad responsible too because...
Just waiting for this too.
There was another time that you fell asleep in the studio and I had everyone clear everything out and then run cables into you and then we opened the studio and lightning went off above.
That was you!
That was me.
Yes, I thought correct. I was Frankenstein's monster.
Yes.
Right.
I was like, I'm alive! But I said, wait, I already was alive. I didn't need the lightning, but I got it.
I feel like I should also apologise for the time you. When you fell asleep and I took all those live octopuses and I put them all over your body, completely covering it from head to toe.
Yes. And what did I think I was then?
I played my octopus teacher in the background and I said, who's your teacher now?
That's right. I said, oh, fuck. I'm the octopus and the octopus teacher. Because we saw a very early cut before it was released, like years before.
The other downside was the number of full body hickeys that you had by the end of it.
Oh, so many hickeys. I look like a bloody a reverse leech, like, you know, someone giving off blood instead of sucking it in. Well, you know, I didn't think that was what any of you were going to apologize for. I didn't know any of you did that. So that's good. No.
Well, I actually do have one thing to apologize for.
I knew this was coming.
I think it was just that one time when I lured you into a dark alley in...
that was you!
It was. Dressed
I had
up.
No idea.
Well, I you know...
Wait, who did you think was luring you?
Just some nice lad, just some sort of future friend.
Because that's the best way to make future friends is to follow them into an alleyway late at night.
Well, he's interested in me. I don't even know me, and he's paying such attention. We must have a connection.
I was very sweet, you know, in the role that I was playing, but, you know...
What was the prank, mate?
Well, the goal of the prank... You know me, I sort of board a train not knowing where it's going and then jump off at certain point.
So your idea of a prank, mate, was to just lure another man into a dark alleyway in the middle of the night, and that was your prank?
Well, you got me good, because I walked right in. I'd been walking a beeline right down our Charing Cross, and I was like, this is it, I know where I'm going. Then I saw a mate here, and I took a right into an alley, and I was all out of sorts for quite a while.
So the end of it was he was in an alley.
I disoriented, yeah. And I said, I lost my way.
Oh, is that when you thought you were Jack the Ripper, though?
Yeah, I walked up, you know, I must be Jack the Ripper. I must have just killed a whore.
Right.
And that wasn't my intention at first, you know. My intention going in had something to do with vampires.
For weeks I was on the run, thinking I was Jack the Ripper. I felt so guilty. I couldn't figure out how our time travelled to the present. What a mess I was.
Right, we all apologise for this, right, mate?
We're so sorry about that. Yeah.
I didn't think this was what any of you were going to apologise for. I thought what you were going to apologise for was that night we all played charades and you kept making me do the charades for the movie Irreconcilable Differences starring Drew Barrymore. Because it's so hard, and I had to keep doing it in charades, and I kept throwing me wrist out, trying to give, you know, clues to this quite difficult title.
I remember I kept yelling out, recycle.
Yeah, you were getting it wrong.
All of us wrote that movie down and put it in the hat, so you kept getting it over and over again, and we all wrote it, but none of us guessed it.
Well, I thought that was something you're going to apologise for, but turns out you were going to apologise for making me a fake mummy, Frankenstein's monster, octopusy teacher, and man in alley.
Right. Oh, it's like just like the Universal Studios monsters, right? Those classic
That's right,
four.
Yeah, the classic ones. Right. Yeah. The classic man, four.
The classic man
mummy,
in alley.
Mummy, Frankenstein, octopusy, and man in alley.
Do you know, I heard Gore Verbinski's going to be remaking Man in Alley.
Oh.
It deserves it, I think.
Right.
It's never been given the right treatment.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's just an entire 3.5-hour film in one alleyway. No cuts.
One take.
Well, that was the original premise for our music video for Quantum Dumb, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. One take, 3 hours.
The album was only 74 minutes long, though.
Essentially, it was just, we were just going to play the record twice as a concert filmed in an alley.
But one time we played it in stereo and the next time we played it in mono, right? You were very involved in this, right, Stone? Because you had to take out some cables set up very differently for
the stereo setting and a mono set.
Right.
Very different cables involved for those two recording modes. You got a mono cable and you're trying to record stereo. Good luck.
Who are you shocking cables for these days?
Oh, thank you for asking. I've been doing audiobooks mostly. Good money in audiobooks. Quite a lot of recording.
So you just do one plug at the beginning.
It's not a lot of work after you start, but it's very crucial. You get that one right. There's one plug at the beginning, snick snack, you're all in. You just got to keep an eye on it.
Is there an audiobook lately that you are most proud of cabling?
My favourite one is A Guide to London's Lions.
Oh.
I don't know if you know this, but there's a small pack of lions who've been free in London for quite some time, and they've acclimated to the streets, and you can find them.
Can I ask, an audiobook version of The Guide to London's Lions, is it?
Right, yeah. The book itself is mostly maps, so the audiobook's a lot of describing things. Sort of like, all right, picture Trafalgar Square, but from above, and now guide your vision north, you know, or whatever.
Right.
Who was the narrator?
But, you know who did it? I'll give you 10 guesses.
Oh.
I'll give you a clue.
Right.
He played Doctor Who, and his name is David Tennant.
Was it the Queen? Are we talking about
not
the Queen?
Not the Queen. Nope. Wrong.
No. All right. Was it David Attenborough?
No. Wrong.
Was it Richard Attenborough?
Wrong again.
Was it Richard Curtis?
Wrong. Oh, I knew you'd have trouble.
Was it David who?
No, not David who.
Was it the movie Tenet?
Nope.
Was it the tentacle from the octopus movies?
No, wouldn't that be fun?
Was it Doctor Strange?
No, well, he's a fictional character.
Oh, was it British Doctor Strange?
Yes.
Raw. I guessed it.
I said David Tennant before, but I lied to throw you off.
Lovely.
It was British Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange.
You have to give us some credit. We did it in 9, not 10.
Oh, but are you counting?
Yes, I kept counting.
You got it right. You got it in under 10.
Stone, do you still have the cable caravan?
Of course, yeah.
Oh, I love the cable caravan.
I wouldn't have much of a job without it after I got all my equipment.
I think my favourite part of this caravan is it was set up as one of those bicycle ones where you get the beer to drink and then you have to cycle
where there are 8 people around it.
Right.
That's right, yeah. Well, it's fun, but it's bad for me if I ever got a gig because I've got to find 8 people to come aboard my caravan and pedal so I can get to my gigs.
Do you usually lure them in with beer?
You know what I've been doing? I've been using Alistair's trick. I lure them into an alley and then I kidnap them and I'll drag them on and I say, all right, stop pedaling, I'll bring you back to that alley.
Right.
I have to say, you know, it's a good trick.
No one said it wasn't, mate.
Right.
I got a question.
Please.
Whatever happened to that mouse? The one that was loose in, what was the studio called?
Blue Horse.
Blue Horse.
Horse.
I heard he's actually quite successful now.
Lovely. Because he was really struggling when we knew him.
Right. Big depressive funk, right? Yeah.
Yeah, now he's in Modest Mouse.
Oh, boy.
He stole Float On from us.
No, shit! You wrote Float On?
The best piece of work I've ever made. And then that mouse came out of here, brought it to his new band, and, you know, it's fucking bullshit, you know?
Oh, what a shame. It's a cracker track.
He brags about it all the time, though, right? So it's like, are you really a Modest Mouse?
You don't belong. By definition, you don't belong.
Nope. Not at all.
That's a shame. I hate when members of bands don't fit their modifiers.
Right. The Beatles always kept the beat right.
So that made sense then, didn't it?
Right.
And Rolling Stones sort of moved around a lot, yeah.
Right.
And Kiss loved to make out, yeah.
And the Kinks liked fucking their own shoes.
Yeah. Who was this band again?
So it's good, yeah. So it sort of suits them, you know, it's nice.
Right. Cher is very sharing, right? She always shares.
Oh, she gives away everything.
You know who I have a little beef with is Evanescence, because the essence of Evan is not there.
It's really
confusing, you know?
Well, you know what Ben I always hated along similar lines was Alien Ed Farm. I was like, where is it? Nowhere, right. That's where. It's a lie.
You know, I always had a problem with Hootie and the Blowfish, right? I'm like, where's the owl, right? And why isn't he giving oral sex to a fish right now? I don't understand, right?
It's a big lie. Huge.
Right.
And the Doors aren't a bunch of doors either.
They're not. They're human beings. Sorry, Doors
so
fans.
So misleading.
Well, wait, hold on. But then what do we think about our name?
I was about to ask that same question.
Oh, no. Stone Cold Paradise, right?
Yeah, it makes sense.
So I feel like, Stone, you should know that since the band was initially named after your first name.
I've got the same name, yeah. And then several albums into your career, you hired me.
Right, we were originally called Testicle Cold Paradise. And we were just like, is this the right name to make it, right?
And then we tried Cold Stone Paradise.
Yep.
Then we tried Cold Stone Creamery. TCBY was in the mix there for a while.
Yeah, but it's right. I remember when you were called TCBY as a fan. That's when you were in the pubs.
That's right.
Playing in the back rows. Here they come, TCBY. You're going to love them.
And these girls would be like, oh my God, the country's best yogurt. And then we showed up.
Yeah, they'd be so disappointed. I thought it was going to be low-fat yogurt. I was like, sorry, mate, blues rock and roll coming your way.
No, right. They're so mad.
You'd think that yogurt fans would be very meek people.
Like, yeah, we still can't play in Oregon, right? In Portland, you know.
It's a shame because it's a great place to play.
Right, yeah.
Stone, are you still playing on your own as well?
I'll do a bit. You know, it's more of a hobby. You know, my passion, of course, is plugging cables in. But sort of to blow steam off, I do like to record my own music. Mostly samples these days, sort of trying to get with the times and be more electronic.
What's an example of an object or a sound that really interested you that you put into a sample?
My favorite sample is arguing couples who don't know that I'm listening. I'll sneak up behind them with a microphone and I'll wait for them to get to something particularly juicy, like, ah, oh, fucked your sister, or like, you got a weak dick, man. And I'll take that sample and I'll put it in the middle of a single.
Stone, that's absolutely amazing. I actually got interested in music because of the rhythm of my parents fighting.
Is that right?
Yes. We had a lot of tin cookware in our house, and I would listen to the cookware thrown by my mother at my father against the various brick walls in the house, because it was all of our walls were brick.
The acoustics must have been terrible.
It was absolutely the worst.
An echo fest.
But just the rhythm of tin hitting brick, I started to think, you know, maybe I could go into music. You know, it's an inspiring kind of thing when you hear a sound that's
so compelling. People fighting, it draws you right in.
It's amazing because if your parents weren't throwing pans at each other's walls and instead they were making love, what career do you think you would have had then?
Yes, right. Sliding doors. I mean, this is a sliding doors type of question.
Right.
No, I was not suggesting that as a job.
No, I'm sorry, Stone, your nose is bleeding.
Got a little bit of nose blood.
Oh, so sorry. Oh, I didn't notice.
It's all right. I guess if my parents had not been fighting constantly and they'd been kind and peaceful and generally loved each other and me...
You'd probably work at McDonald's or something, you know?
I keep thinking maybe I would have been a combat soldier or something like that.
What? How'd you... Why?
I don't know. I suppose, you know, just the idea of having that much serenity, I would have needed to go the opposite direction.
Oh.
But I think Hawk brings up an interesting query, though. You know, we would all maybe not be in a band if we didn't have such dark and terrible childhoods.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying that if the specific circumstances of our life were completely different circumstances, that we would be different people?
That's not what I'm saying at all. No, what I'm saying is...
I think that was a sarcastic question. Don't answer it. I think the answer is built into that question and it doesn't need answering.
Right.
I think he's making fun of you, Alistair.
Oh, he often does. He often does. He gets salty.
All right, just look out. Isn't it ironic, though, that our childhood trauma, so much pain it caused, also gave all of us a gift of a desire to be in music?
Right.
Stone, did you have a specific trauma in your life that led you to cabling?
I did, and I've forgiven my parents for it, but for a long time, I was quite angry at them. They used to wake me up in the middle of the night and wrap me up in a cable and lasso me around their head like I was a bolo and fling me out the window and go, "We don't love you." And I was like, "Meh." And then, you know, I crawl back in, you know, we was joking. I was like, "Oh, all right." You know, it sort of really left me in a bit of a haze emotionally. And now I only can get an erection when I'm plugging cables in.
Right.
If your parents had, instead of wrapped cables around you and thrown you out the window and instead threw a bunch of cheeseburgers at you, maybe you would be a cheeseburger man now.
Almost definitely. I can see it. In fact, you just saying that makes me want to do it.
I think the other interesting thing is now I'm remembering why you always wore yoga pants while working, because you had an erection every time you plugged a cable.
Every time I plugged in, I would get like a little ping pong. And I didn't want to distract or be rude.
It didn't hurt you when it went down, though.
No, because I went to a doctor like a normal person. When I get gonorrhea, I'd go to the gonorrhea doctor straight away.
Not going to do it. What could he know?
I'd give him a chance. Every time you lose a boner, you're shuddering in pain. You're making your gonorrhea, giving it Hulk-like strength.
All I'm going to get from the doctor is him trying to prove that he knows more about me than me, and I guarantee you he does not.
No, you'll also get medicine for your gonorrhea, mate. Maybe he will prove he knows more than you.
I feel like I can do it with my own salve.
Salve?
What century are you in, mate?
Yeah, mate. Who's Jack the Ripper now? I'm only kidding. I know you're not.
Now, Hawk, I can't, correct me if I'm wrong. Do you have a charity for gonorrhea? Or?
Oh, yeah, Gators for Gonorrhea. So we give a bunch of pills to alligators who have gonorrhea and we help them solve it. So, mate, if you want to try one of the gator pills, I can lend you one.
What do you mean you'll lend him one?
Oh, yeah, you know. Yeah.
He's got to give it back.
To give it back.
After it goes through him.
Yeah, they're recyclable, so I can use it on a gator still, you know.
I don't want to brush over this, but again, the charity is called Gators for Gonorrhea. Yes.
Yeah, but it's all to cure the gonorrhea the gators have.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. They're for the gonorrhea pills to, like, cure them, you know, yeah. I mean, look, listen.
Hawk has another charity I remember. It's called Kids for Cancer, and it's like to cure their cancer, but it confuses everyone. It's like, oh, you the kids who are in favour of cancer said, no, we're not. We're trying to get rid of it.
What's even better about that one is that it's written in very childlike graphics with kids, the number 4, cancer.
Yeah.
All in crayon with like a bunch of stick figures holding hands. And
I did a fun run to support a charity and I got to the banner and I missed the whole run because I stood there confused. I was like, what? The name mollified me.
Would be better if it's Kids for Kids with Cancer.
No, it's too many words. It's too many words.
Yeah, can't fit it on a license plate. It's not
because Kids
charity,
for Cancer is also KFC, so I get free branding from the chicken.
Well, put it to bed. I'm not going to go to the doctor.
All right.
Well, when your dick falls off, don't come crying to us.
And if for some reason my gonorrhea develops a gamma ray like strength of a Hulk and terrorizes London,
well, then we have to deal with that. I'd say
we would have to deal with that. Yeah, it'd be our problem then.
Right.
A rampaging dick of our friend.
Right. Who would be the Bruce Banner in that situation?
Would it be his non-erect dick would be.
Right?
Yeah, the flaccid penis would be Bruce
his
Banner.
Flaccid dick could be Bruce Banner and the hard dick could be the Hulk.
It would be trying to reason with that flaccid dick, right? Come on, you got to do something about this,
and
mate.
Let me control you. Let me control you and the hard dick could be like, no, I smash.
And then I guess in the scenario, the rest of me is, what, Thunderbolt Ross?
Yes, right. Oh, we're really in the weeds here, but I feel the non-erect dick could be Bruce Banner, the hard dick could be the Hulk, most of the rest of your body, General Thunderbolt Ross, and maybe the soft tips of your fingers, Betty Ross.
Right.
I don't know Thunderbolt Ross. I know Betsy Ross.
No, not the lady who made
the flag in America. Yeah, no, this is Thunderbolt Ross is the sort of main antagonist in the early Hulk stories. Oh. He hates Bruce Banner. Because his daughter Betty's in love with him and he hates weaklings. But ironically, he also hates the Hulk.
So in the cinematic universe, in the last film, I believe, Bruce Banner and Hulk kind of found a common ground where they're sort of in the middle, right?
Yeah, so, they agreed on wearing glasses.
So does that just...
That's what the fight was about.
That was it.
That's right.
That was the main
takeaway. So Hulk wanted to go no... eye modification and Banner's like, I need contacts. And they compromised on Warby Parker glasses. I worked sound on one of the Marvel movies.
Oh, you did?
Which one?
Which one?
Thor 2. Oh.
The Dark World?
Right.
Yeah. I fucked it up. That movie was supposed to be good and I made it bad. I fucked it up.
I heard they had to actually re-record half the movie because they didn't get any of the sound because someone forgot to plug in the cable.
Movie's all dubbed.
Oh, right. Is that why?
When you're on a major franchise picture, is it at all different from working with huge rock bands or on a stage musical on Broadway?
Nothing's as fun as working with you lads. You were the best.
Oh, lovely.
The best days of my life is working on Quantum Dumb.
I'd say the best days of our lives was probably Quantum Dumb as well.
Oh, thank God.
Right. We need to bring you back, mate.
Between you and the mouse and just being in that studio covered in blood, it just, I mean, every part of...
I forgot about that part, but that's true.
The album Quantum Dumb was named as a direct attack at Carl Sagan. Do you think it's a moment here for a bit of fan mail?
Yes, I think so.
The time has come.
I'd love to, yeah. Do you need to write some?
No, Stone. People, I appreciate it. And
no, I love some. Rock.
Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I do remember getting some fan mail from you in the past for albums that you worked on.
Yes, right. Doing a recording. I thought you needed a little encouragement.
But in this case, these are other people writing to us.
All right.
And many times there's some germane information to it, to the work that you've done, and we just love your opinion on how to respond to them.
Right.
All right, let's do it.
But Stone, if you got one, we'd love to hear it, please, by all means.
Oh, sure, right. I'll write now. Dear Stone Cold Paradise, I think you're crackers. I think your music is ace, and I think your lyrics are gear. Last time I played your record, I got so hard, I came on my radio. Thank you. Love, an anonymous fan, Stone Collins.
Oh, you wrote that one.
Yeah, I wrote that one.
Did you write anonymous fan and then your name?
Yeah, that's right. I didn't want you to be confused.
I've got one here as well, actually.
Oh, right, good.
This one's actually directed to you, Stone. It says,
how
dear
odd.
Right, isn't that strange?
Because I'm on just right now. It's probably a time traveller.
It has to be. I think we have one every show. Dear Stone.
It's incredible.
Dear Stone Collins, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
It's not live. I don't need to answer. I'm sorry.
You can if you want. If you want to answer, you totally can.
Oh, I don't want to interrupt.
Dear Stone Collins, hello. How are you? Are you well?
So hard not to answer.
I hope that you're having a good day. Are you having a good day?
It's very difficult.
You can tell me if you want to, but don't. Don't answer the letter. But how are you? Really? Don't answer that question.
Jeez,
please.
Oh, jeez, Louise.
Answer this question. How Christian are you? No, don't answer that.
I know who this is.
Signed, The Edge.
I knew it. What a gent. Checking up on me. I wish he wrote me directly and not via this podcast. It seems a bit long, a roundabout way to reach me. He's got me email.
But maybe we talked about it a little bit, but how Christian are you?
Oh, I'd say C-. C-.
C-, Christian?
Yeah.
Right. Christian minus.
That's right, yeah.
A for atheist, B for Buddhist, right? D for dick. Just love dick, right?
My religion is dick.
Do you have a letter, Hawk?
Oh, yeah, I got a letter. Dear Stone Called Paradise. How you like me now? Suck my tiny little pecker, I win. Roger, I hope you've been enjoying the cheese baskets I've been sending. It's the yellow kind from the Modest Mouse.
All right. Well, that's nice, right? Yeah. First, it's a slap in our face, and then it's some cheese for me, right? I like that. Then, it's fair. He can have that smash hit float on, right? And I'll get the cheese. Even Stevens, right?
I think he's insulting you, mate. I don't think it's meant as a nice thing.
No, you're all wrong, right? Have you ever had these cheeses, right? They're so tasty, right?
The tone of the letter's very aggressive.
They're Kraft singles, mate. They're not even real cheese.
It's cheese to me, right? Damn it. It's cheese to me.
But they're not even unwrapped. It's just wrapped up squares of Kraft individual cheese. It's not very loving.
Please don't destroy my cheese dreams, everyone.
Right.
I'm happy with that letter, right? I appreciate it, mate. Thank you for the cheeses. And, I don't know why everyone else is so angry about it.
Well, Roger, Barney, do you have a letter for us?
Oh, yes, I have one. Let's see. Dear Stone Cold Paradise, I am writing you about a potential timeshare opportunity.
I love this.
I have a lovely property in South America, which features a beautiful black lagoon on a lovely lush tree lining. If you're interested, you can arrange either partial year, half year, or three-quarter year.
Mate, is this in your spam?
No, this is, in fact, it looks like it's verified.
That letter's verified.
That letter's verified.
What is a black lagoon?
I don't know, but I know a prank we can put on Stone there, right? Quite good prank.
Well, which I can't see it coming.
You didn't hear that, Stone.
Yeah, it's great. We'll make him a teacher and tell him that that's where the school is.
Yeah, you could be the teacher from the Black Lagoon.
Right.
Yeah, the great monster. The teacher of the Black Lagoon.
Yeah, mate, we're going to send him a letter saying he just got accepted as a teacher for like a third grade class. But when he gets there, it's just a big lagoon. There's no school.
So look out, Stone.
I wonder if I'll forget this. I bet I will. I've got bad medium-term memory.
All right. You know, I got a letter here, right? It says, don't... Yeah, well, this, don't right. right.
This what stone a way cold, to bring that up.
Dear Stone Cold Paradise and Stone Collins, right? Huh. I was wondering about the Incredible Hulk, you know. What's the deal with him, right? Is he supposed to represent, you know, fears about atomic power and whatnot?
May I interrupt? Right,
please, go on.
Are the rights written into the letter, or are you sort of adding them?
That's just an artistic license on mine.
All right.
Right.
Back to the Hulk.
Right. Or get this right. That was written in there, right? Does it represent Jack Kirby's feelings about Stan Lee not giving him the credit due?
Oh, I just got a boner, because I'll get very aroused by that issue.
Right.
But I'll tell you this, when I lose my boner, no pain.
That's good, mate.
I feel like I'm under attack.
From gonorrhea, you are.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, don't be mad at us.
Right.
I thought when you said Jack Kirby, I thought you said Jack the Ripper.
Oh, is it me?
Oh, no. He thinks he's Jack the Ripper again.
I did it. I'm sorry, whores.
Are you saying whores or horse?
Horse. Two separate thoughts.
Stone Collins was played by improv guru, actor, writer, and funny man Will Hines. Will is a master improv teacher at the Upright Citizens Brigade and runs his own online improv school, the World's Greatest Improv School. He's written two fantastic books on improv, How to Be the World's Greatest Improviser, and Pirate Robot Ninja, an improv fable. Follow him online at Willie B. Hines on Instagram and at Will Hines on Twitter. Hawk Wellington is played by Allison Phillips. Alistair Ritchie is played by Ryan Coyle. Roger Powers is played by Zach Olson. And Barney St. Clair is played by me, Andrew Young. You can follow the podcast at Stone Cold Paradise Podcast on Instagram and at SCP Podcast on Twitter. Or check out the band's website, stonecoldparadise.com.